Are you building a thinking classroom? Teachers everywhere are excited about getting students thinking in math class because of the book from Peter Lilliedahl published in 2020. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to speak with Peter. You can listen to that conversation on episodes 93 and 96. But I had the chance to talk with Peter about building a thinking classroom. And then he recommended that I chat with his new co-author, Megan Giroux. Megan and Peter are working on a book specifically about the tasks for elementary school teachers and how we can implement those tasks in our classrooms. Here's the thing, finding a task is difficult, but implementing it is complex, am I right? So in this new book from Peter and Megan, they will be walking us through different tasks and exactly how to do each of the steps in the Building Thinking Classroom framework inside the book. Highly anticipated and coming out so soon. So I had the chance to talk with Megan, and this is our conversation. She is a middle school math teacher as well as, get this, a kindergarten math teacher. You're going to love her realness, her practical ideas. It's going to feel like you're just listening to two teacher friends chat. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Megan Giroux. This is Honest Math Chat, and I'm Mona Eel of Mona Math. I'm a former math avoider turned math teacher cheerleader, and I'm going to get real honest with you about math classroom culture, engagement, math discussions, and all the student-centered instructional practices to help you empower your students to love and understand math deeply. So every Monday on Honest Math Chat, we're going to work together to make our classrooms places where students see themselves as mathematicians. But let's not wait. If you're ready to engage every learner and get them pumped about math, you've got to use math discussions. I welcome you to download the guide to engaging math discussions right now. Go to monamath.com/discussions. You'll get all my best tips on how to guide on the side while getting every child meaningfully engaged in discussing their math thinking. Hey, welcome to the show, Megan. So excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here on this Monday, fairly chilly like morning and or afternoon. Oh my gosh, I'm just a disaster. Afternoon, it is 1:10 now. So yeah, it's lovely to be here.
And Megan just shared with me that she was just teaching kindergartners 10 minutes ago. So, you know, you don't have to know what time it is. It's fine.
Yeah, you really never need to know like what time it is. Well, and like also, I don't know, with like I'm kindergarten, it's just funny because I think that like by this point in teaching them, it's just like I have a skewed perception of it too. Because I'm just like rolling with it and I'm like, oh my gosh, time is done. Like every time I'm like, consolidating, come on guys, hurry up. We got to close it all out.
Absolutely. That can happen in a kindergarten classroom. In fact, after this, I'm headed to my son's kindergarten classroom to help them go to library. That's my Monday afternoon thing I do every day. So never taught kindergarten and never hope to, but I get my fix by going to my son's classroom. Oh, yeah. All right, well, girl. Oh, go ahead.
The one thing I was going to say was that I actually have a middle years degree. And so I'm shocked that I teach kindergarten because when people look at me sometimes as this like K to two kind of guru of math, I'm like, okay, I just took the chance on it, I think was the biggest thing because I know so many teachers who are like, I'd never teach like I'm kindergarten. I was the same way. And then I was just like, well, maybe I will. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is great.
Yeah. But as a middle school teacher, you know that middle schoolers and kindergartners, same thing.
Exactly. It's fairly true. You use the same kind of like wording often. Yeah.
You got to give them movement breaks. You got to like, you know, meet their all their needs as middle schoolers and kindergartners. A few less times you have to zip a middle schooler's coat, I guess, instead of a kindergartner's.
That's true. They do fight about the same amount with like one another, though. They're still
totally
the same kind of like sharing like problems. I'm like, can you share that marker actually?
Like whether you're 12, whether you're 12 or five, right? Well, people that are listening and teachers everywhere, you're in Canada, but I think a lot of our teachers here that are listening are in the US, but like teachers everywhere are obsessed with building thinking classrooms. And you are the co-author on the long-awaited and highly anticipated task book that's coming out.
Yes.
So can you tell us about it or just give us like a sneak peek and then tell us about you, like how sure. you got to the moment of being the co-author?
Yeah, which also still, and yeah, and like, I'm not too sure if this is just the female person, like within me, but I'm still like, why me, right? And I think I even texted Peter like a few like months ago, and I'm like, why me? And he's like, Megan, stop. Like, I'm asking me that. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, sure. And so I feel like that's still kind of a part of it, but I'm still like, why is it me?
Totally relatable, I feel like. Mm-hmm.
I think so. And who knows, like maybe like Peter feels that way sometimes is what I like to tell mm-hmm. people. I'm like, maybe Peter feels like he's not. And like, also I did hear a story once about how Neil like Armstrong was like, didn't feel like he should have been like invited to a like party. And I was like, if the man who walked on the moon can have that.
Yes.
I think that I can have like imposter syndrome. I'm allowed. Okay.
Absolutely.
If he has that, I can have that. Okay.
I think it just means that you're doing something that's important to you when you feel that way.
Yeah. And that's probably it. Right. Yeah. So, so this happened and so Peter reached out to me and my school division, and I always like, I'm shout out my good friend, Kyle Webb, who is one of the other two hosts of the Think Thank Thunk podcast with me and Dean Venderman. But Kyle Webb is my math consultant for my division, and he brought Peter in a bunch. And then I took a class from Peter, like online through Simon Fraser University. And it was like a random happenstance that I could take the class. And then it turned out only 30 people were in the class. And then we just kind of got to talking. And then that's how I got to know him a little bit more, but still to the point where I was like, not prepared for him to be like, hey, do you want to write this book with me? But then the email came in, like, it was like 2022 I had just gotten home from, I actually did the Rosenthal Prize Institute. Like, it wasn't to actually win the prize, because that's amazing and fantastic and maybe one day, but I got to go to the National Museum of Mathematics. And then I remember coming home being like, that's the coolest like experience ever. And then a week later, it was like, Peter had asked me, and I was like, well, that kind of trumps that whole trip entirely. I'm like, oh, that feels weird. Yeah. And so pretty much he had just said, hey, do you want to like write this book? And I said, oh, sure. And then my imposter like syndrome again said, oh, is this a small like collection of like teachers, or is this like a lot of teachers? And he's like, it's just you and me. And then I took another step back and was like, what? Okay. And then I breathed like deeply for another 20 minutes. And then I finally was like, okay, like, let's do this. And then, but the fun part about writing this book, and I don't get to talk to enough people like about it, is that the research has been so dynamic over the last, that was probably 16 months ago, or I guess 18 months ago. And the book has changed from like our first draft to now. Like, even the people who looked at our first draft, they'd be like, oh, it's totally different, because the research just kept updating, right? Like, the consolidation changed, the like notes changed, like all of these things just kept on evolving. And then I remember Peter being like, hey, we need to do this. And I'm like, we have to, like, I'm like, publish it. Like, I'm eventually, Peter, come on, we got to put this into print at some point though, right? But, you know, which like is good, because we just finished the final draft last week. So like, we're finally, it is in there. So you can know that what's coming in May is very, 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 like, it's very like recent and current, which is awesome to hear. And yeah, the book is pretty much just broken down into just different parts. The first part is a big thing of like what's changed, right? It's because mm-hmm. his first book came out in 2020, like 3 years, almost 4 years now. There's a lot that has changed, and the research has grown. And I would say it's even more robust now, because when you go onto a Facebook page with 50,000 people like sharing stories, like, as if that isn't somewhat like impactful for that.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah. And then from there, there's some non-curricular tasks. There's some curricular tasks. And then I think one of the, and like, I think that when we talk about tasks, because I know that people, at least in my view, I'm used to the Jennifer Cervallos giving me 300 writing strategies, which is phenomenal. Like, it's mm-hmm. so good. But our tasks are so robust. They go from like the launch script all the way down to the consolidation and the check your understanding questions, and like exactly what you want to give them for like notes to their future forgetful selves, like every like little bit, and like word by word, how to push them in this direction, how to give them this, and how to help them, and what's the hint and extension and everything, and the possible solutions. Like, there's a lot more to those tasks. So there's not quite 300. Sorry, guys. We couldn't quite do that.
That's great. Okay. I feel like what you just said. All right, let's break it down. You said there's curricular tasks, there's non-curricular tasks. Mm-hmm. I want to go there for a minute, and then we're going to get to these scripts and all the things that are in there, because people are like dying for this, right? So first, math tasks. What makes a good math task? And then let's just start there. What's a good math task?
So I think that when you're thinking of like a non-curricular tasks, right? I think that the biggest thing, and this was also in his original book, is it needs to have a low floor, but can go quite far, right? So low floor, high ceiling, those are great tasks. And those become facets of a task because people need to be able to start. Every student needs to be able to walk in and have something to go off of.
Yeah.
So for instance, I just did the kindergarten task of the next door neighbors. Or the next door numbers, which is like you give them 10 boxes and then it's like the one can't be beside the two and then the two can't be beside the one or the three and the next door numbers can't be side by side. And then you like extend to like up and down and then you extend further to diagonal and you kind of keep going and going and going. And we've actually like restoried that a little bit to be like siblings, which has kind of been fun. And I just tried that with them today and that was a lot of fun for them. But that task at the end of the day, at least kids can start just like writing numbers down. Even if kids don't necessarily know how to add, they can just try to write them down and just giving them that like low floor. But even I have a new instructional aid for because I have two high need students in the morning and two high need students in the like afternoon. And so I have two like aides who are full-time like with these students. And one of the aides was like, this is a tough task. And I was like, kind of, hey. Because you know what? It is tough because it kind of gets like, you know, like I'm harder and like I'm harder, but also that task, which is one of my other favorite facets of a great thinking task is that it kind of pushes the students to make mistakes and they have to revise their thinking, right? Because the chances of some kid getting it right off the hop the first time is just not going to happen. So they have to revise. And I love that idea of the revision and like getting them to make the mistakes, but like it being totally okay. So this like an aide who is brand new today because my other like an aide had a baby, which is so like lovely, but she's gone now. She was surprised as to how the kids were just willing to just like scrap it all and like not like scrap it all, but like from starting again. And that's, and I think that's a fairly somewhat uniquely kindergarten trait sometimes too, which is why this K to five realm has been exciting for me over the past few years because they just are cool with just like making the mistake, right?
Yeah.
And also there's so many different ways of doing it. Like that task, there's like a few different solutions. There's not one solution where it's just going to be done.
Right. Okay. So, and when kids do more math tasks, they're more willing to put out that in progress thinking, right? They're more willing to be like, fine, this didn't work. Let's try this over here and shift. But you're probably not going to get that on the first time you do a task. But as you do them and you build that mindset, right? Okay. Love it. So that is a non-curricular task. I was just talking to a teacher on a coaching call earlier this week, and she was like, can you help me understand what a curricular task is and a non-curricular task and a thin slice and a this and a that? And I was like, yeah, girl, let's break it down.
Just like, guys. Yeah.
So I kind of like this idea of like a math task, a good math task allows everybody to get started and it can scale up to meet everybody's need for challenge, right? Because we know that that is so different across our, you know, students. But it also has lots of solution pathways and maybe different answers and lots of ways to differentiate. We said that. Was there anything else? Like if we were making a little criteria list?
Well, I think that in terms of mine, my favorite tasks are like, I'm always one that breed creativity, just like something where like the kids can kind of like chew on it. But also I think that a good task, and this is just me personally, I love to make a story out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
My 6-7s at this point know that everything I tell them is a lie because all of my stories are ridiculous. And they're like, is this? And so I think it was like, I was telling them before Christmas, I was like, hey, I've decided because we were doing, I wanted them to do lowest common multiple. And I was like, hey guys, I am hosting like I'm Christmas for the first time ever. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yes, this is true. And they're like, okay. And I was like, but you know what? I don't like the traditional I'm like meal. And they're like, okay. And they still don't quite trust me, right? Like they're like, okay. And so then like I was talking about how I need to get, and this is a, I think it's a Robert Kaplinsky task that I changed a little bit. And it was like, okay, so the hot dogs come in packs of 8 and then the hot dog buns come in packs of 6, but you know, like how much do I have to get? And they're like, okay. And then I'm getting like, I'm candy canes and I'm getting chips and I'm getting juice. And they're like, and they just like, no, but I just feel like that like allows them to just kind of like invest a little bit more. I love a good story because they like lean in. Like I've done tasks or like I've watched kids listen to stories and they will physically like lean in to the person telling the story. That's a really interesting social cue that tells you, like, tell me more.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening for me 5 years ago.
And when you make it relatable context, right, then kids can see themselves in the math. Like, yeah, you can ask them to do whatever you just said, least common multiple. But like a lot of times our textbook tasks are not relatable or they don't have any context to them. So having a story, I am a huge proponent of like word problems or story problems. And so yes, yes, yes. And then the other thing you said the last time was good math tasks allow students to make mistakes. It's almost like written in there, like you're not going to get it on the first time.
Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that awesome?
Because if you have a math task that they can just solve like boom, like that, then you probably didn't pick the right problem, right? And so you got to find a more challenging one.
Well, and I would say my favorite, or one of, I would say like my favorite, but one of my favorite quotes from Peter's original book is that tasks are inert, that tasks need students to bring them to life. And that's what I like love is that I have some tasks in there that like are like non-curricular for a 4 or 5, but they're incredibly curricular for a 6, 7 class, and maybe even a like mimicking task for somebody else. If they already know how to do it, it's not so like tasks aren't like, it's not a good task, a bad task, because what is a good task for one kid and how you deliver it, which is why I think when we were trying to figure out the book, because people were like, we want tasks. We're like, no, you don't. You don't need more tasks. Like, we have tons of tasks. What are you talking about? But it wasn't that they necessarily needed tasks. They needed to know how to put one like in that was guaranteed to be successful. Like how to deliver the task in a particular way, which is, I think, more of what this book is. The tasks are great. But I think it's the more you read, the more you look at them, you're like, oh, this is how I can like phrase this. This is how I can do this. This is the wording that's going to be really nice because it's been tested with so many students.
And what I appreciate about Peter's work is he so clearly like identifies for teachers and gives them permission that like this isn't like a lockstep script, that you are going to go into this lesson and it's going to be messy and you're not going to know how to get out of it and you're not going to know how to wrap it up in a neat little bow at the end. And that doesn't always happen. And you can't go in with like one expectation because it's all going to blow up in your face. And that's wonderful, right? Because that's learning. And so I just love that he gives teachers permission, because for too long, we learned and then have replicated in our teaching that math is like, do this, right? Mimic me. Then you'll get the answer. Then we can move on to the fun stuff in our day. And like, we now have this permission to say, okay, this is just a big, messy process. However, that makes people really uncomfortable, right? And so teachers are like dying for a little bit of a script. And so that's so exciting that we're going to have that in this new text.
Oh, yeah. Well, and like, honestly, for me, and like, I do know for like diversity, I'm like, for different reasons, we had changed some of the like names and stuff to try to be more like inclusive and stuff like that. However, a lot of the tasks, like include my son's names. Like they just have them in there but then it should be like, this is relevant to me. Right. I'm always like, I'm doing this. You guys are doing this. We're doing this. It's so important to have that like ownership of your tasks. Like, and that's how I do it all the time, which is why my students have no trust in me, because they're like, you tell us lies all the time about you and your sons and your husband and your dogs. I'm like, yeah, probably. But you know what? That makes it more relevant. And so I do hope, specifically, and actually both of the tasks, a lot of like me and Peter's, like, it's just us is just in the tasks. And I hope the people are like, you put yourself there and kids are then like, I'm engaged and they care because they care about their teachers.
Yes. Well, and I think, you know, you bring up a good point of building a community of mathematicians is about more than doing math. It's about knowing each other. And I think one thing that happens with teachers that struggle is they're not willing to get vulnerable with their students. And what's more vulnerable than being like, so the way I hang my clothes in my closet is, you know, like you have to put yourself out there to your students. And like you said, they love knowing you. They want to know you. They want to know each other. They want to know themselves. And so the more you know your students and you know their community that they live in and let them know you, the more you're going to build investment around these tasks. I absolutely love that. I love it so much. Okay. Can you tell us now about the different types of tasks, just like curricular, non-curricular? I like how you said earlier, like a non-curricular task for a kindergartner might be a mimicking task for a third grader who knows how to multiply. but it's a non-curricular task because, you know, kindergartners are brand new with this. Kind of shed a little light on those two terms maybe for people.
This was a while ago because Peter, he had spoken to me about the term like curricular potential before for like tasks. And like, I do like that term, but I just don't know. And like, I haven't heard it since from him, but, and like, I'm not sure if that's something, but I do like that idea of like, it just has curricular potential. But when you're doing like, there's no task that we're doing that isn't like innately mathematical or like anything. Like for my kindergartners, just, I gave them the cards today and they had to get to the boards. That was a task.
Yeah.
And then like looking at the, I'm like five and having to match the five. That was the task for them. And that's okay. However, I think that curricular potential or like these like non-curricular tasks, you just can't guarantee what they're going to do. So like, whereas I think in terms of these curricular tasks and the thin slicing, they're just a bit more, not like contrived. I don't think that's the right word, but they're more carefully like thought out in terms of like, this is where I need them to be at the end, right? Because you have a plan and you're like, I need them to be here. And it's kind of like, you're just guiding them through this hallway versus curricular tasks. You're like guiding them through a hallway with a like flashlight versus a non-curricular task is just like, just being like, open the door and be like, there's the room. Wherever you go, like, I don't necessarily will follow you. And like, it's just, there's just so many different ways. So like the idea of the creativity side comes out a lot more, I think, in those non-curricular tasks, because they are curriculum, but they might not be your curriculum. And they also might not, and the kids might not do it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you might want them to do fractions and they might somehow find a way to multiply throughout, right? Like, who knows? Or they might be dividing, like you're not sure where they're going to go with it. And that's kind of awesome.
Absolutely.
Like, that's better. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, and what we know about math is it's so integrated, and we have this thing in education, like standards and curriculum, that parse it all out. And really, like what we know is that when you learn this one thing, it's so closely related to this other standard that when we give opportunities for kids to just explore, they get way more practice and experience with many more standards than when we teach them individually.
Oh, yes. Well, there is a task in the book that I really like. I kind of took the idea of this like marching band task, which is, it is a divisibility task, like really. And I think I've used it for my 6-7s before, and it's a great task. And actually Jared Sliger, who is on the BTC America or the America US team, loves it. But I made this task called Brian the Birdie, which is like Brian the Birdie. He's got all of these eggs, and he's trying to put them into groups to make sure that if this big like an eagle doesn't come down and steal like one of his eggs. So he wants to put them into the like equal groups to make sure that if he takes one, he knows one's gone because they all have the same amount. Perfect. And then he puts them into groups of two, and there's one like left over. He puts them into groups of three, and there's two left over. Groups of four, there's three left over, but groups of five work. How many eggs does Brian have? And the kids like love it. And so I was like, oh, this is easy. This is just division, right? I thought kids will have this in like no second. I was shocked at the amount of table of values kids made, and they skip counted to figure it out. And I was like, look at that. Or they drew it out. And I was like, okay. And like, so that was one task where I was like, this is like curricular for sure. I was like, just kidding. It's not. My students just told me it wasn't.
Right.
Which is great. I thought it was awesome because I was like, there's just so many different ways. Because some kids did just divide and they did their like long division, but some kids
didn't. Do you think that maybe when teachers are planning, spending less energy worrying about and labeling what kind of task it is, and more just like choosing a task because it's a good task?
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? Your kids are going to let you know. Like my kids by now, they just tell me, or you can just see it on their faces. You're like, well, that was not very good. Let's just go on to something else now.
We have tomorrow. There's always tomorrow, right?
There's always tomorrow.
So what should teachers do when they're choosing a task? So let's say they're going into like a fourth or fifth grade, like adding and subtracting like fractions. Let's just say fourth grade, adding, subtracting fractions. What do they do? Like when they're looking for tasks, like, do you have a recommendation for how many curricular or non-curricular, or just like any ideas for that first step in planning a kind of unit?
Yeah. So when I'm planning my 6-7 unit, because honestly, like kindergarten, I've done a lot of thin slicing with them, and like the thin slicing, and we can get into that, has been really, really good. But like, there's just different challenges in those like super, super like young years that even like the grade ones and twos don't quite have. And I can discuss those later. But when I'm thinking about it, so for instance, with this lowest common multiple, I started off the first couple of like some good, like just like richer tasks, right? That were certainly curricular, but I knew they would be more of like a thick slice. And we talk a little bit in the book about like thick slice, like where like, you know, there's not in a thin slicing sequence, you might get through 25 questions. In my hosting Christmas thing, I think we got through 5, right? So like there is like extensions, but they are kind of like a thicker sliced extension, and which is great and it's awesome. But it's not quite, I wouldn't call it a thin slicing task, but it is a curricular task, but it's just a richer task. And like, this would be something where it's like they have no idea what to do, right? And so if I was doing something like the adding of fractions, I might start off with something to do. So a task that is in the book, and this is for comparing fractions, but I did it with my dog's food bowls and just being like, my two dogs, like how much does, like who has, I'm like more, right? And so I just took that. And then I was like, so this one has like this much and this one is this much. Who has more dog food? And that's a great task if they don't know how to compare fractions already.
Yeah. Love it.
So, or like you could say my one dog has this much, my like other dog has, I'm like this much. I put it into one of the bowls. How much is there totally now? And then they're like, oh, and, but there's some interest there of like, but they just need to not know how to do it. I would honestly take a textbook task. And be like, this is the task, because like the textbooks are filled with really great tasks. It's just we tell them what to do before we give it to them.
Yes, 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 yes. So what you're saying is like grab a rich task and get started and then just kind of go in and like get more tasks that relate to students in their context and maybe increase in complexity as we go along. So I think one of the things I've noticed, especially like in the Facebook groups, is that like people are just constantly like, I need a task for this. I need a task for that, which is great. It's like so great that you can go to the Facebook group and get like people recommending tasks. But like my question is like, how do you stay organized? So not only finding the task, but then like you said, like planning for all the different parts of like launching, you know, the task and then all the supports and extensions. Do you have any tips for like how people could stay organized?
Yeah. Well, so luckily we do. There will be a template in the book for curricular and non-curricular tasks. We will have a template for people. And part 4 of the book is actually how to make a task. So that's
beautiful.
So there's a big piece of like, because you are right. You have all of these tasks, but when the rubber hits the road, you might have to make a few yourself. And that just happens. And people think that we have this keys. People think that Peter and other people are just magicians. It's like, this isn't some recipe that only Peter knows and he's hiding it from everybody. It's just like practice, right? Like you just have to kind of do it a few more times. But yeah, my general rule of thumb when I'm doing any type of like curriculum is that I want to do a few rich tasks. And then I do like, I'd say like, one to three, maybe 2 to 4-ish, 1 to 4-ish rich tasks. And then I usually go into some thin slicing for 2 or 3 days. And then I like review and I'm pretty much done by then, which is crazy. Now, when we're doing it, I don't oftentimes do a lot of notes with my richer tasks. Sometimes I do like, but it's so funny because it's like I have a plan for a lot and none of it ever happens.
Totally.
Because I'm like, okay, this is what like they will do. Like I remember giving them that lowest common multiple one. I was like, we're going to go through this so fast. And I was like, what? Like they didn't get through any of it, right? Which is great because I could use it the next day. But essentially, whenever I make any tasks, I have my task, I have whatever like extensions I want. And then I will usually have something I want to consolidate with, like some sort of close I have sort of planned. Mm-hmm. And then I usually have either notes or check your understanding questions just ready in my back pocket. So I walk into any class knowing that I'm going to do at least one of those to close it out the lesson. Like even today with the kindergartners, I had no time to close really. However, I still brought them over and had a partially completed solution to that like next door numbers and then had them help me finish it because we need to close it out. Like we just need to be able to bring it in all together because what that does too that I've noticed over the last like little bit is if you always have some sort of close ready, like whatever tasks aside, but having some sort of close prepared allows you to see where they are for the next day. Because I'm like, oh, you don't quite get this quite yet. Okay. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow I need to do that. And that helps you be a little bit more prepared. So just some version of a consolidation. But when I make my tasks, I always have some version of that. So I usually do about, 1 to 4 rich tasks, like 2 to 3, like I'm thin slicing, and sometimes thin slicing, I'm like, oh, they're going to roll like I'm through. I'm like, whoops, just kidding. So thin slicing can take a few days, but you know, you still close and you still give them questions and stuff, but you just have to be super dynamic. So that's why being prepared is good. Mm-hmm. Because if you're over-prepared, you can always like lessen it, but it's really hard to go more when you've under-prepared.
Yes, that's such a good tip, because this isn't the kind of teaching you just jump into with nothing, right? You gotta like have taken some time to be like, okay, where are we going to go? Like, I love that you said you always have to have that close. I always tell the teachers I coach of like, don't skip the debrief, because that's where the learning happens. When I was talking to Peter, he was like, that's where you take their in progress, their messy thinking, and you help them kind of straighten it out. Those aren't his words.
Formalize it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when they have a formal thought, then they can reproduce it and use it the next day. And say, oh, I learned this yesterday, or I remember when so-and-so was talking about this, boom, it's in my brain. And now I can use that.
Oh yeah. Well, or like, I'm even when you're thinking about something like the tax collector, which is a really, really common task. If you don't close that out, kids will never go from the gazintas to factors. Mm-hmm. You change the word gazintas to factors, because some kid will say it. Oh yeah. Well, that's the factors. I'm like, oh, like what's that? And they talk about it.
Right.
That's important, because guess what? Even though I think gazintas are great, or like in grade 10, their teacher wants them to say factors.
Absolutely.
And I'm okay with that. Yes. However, let them build that. And like, I think that's part of the reason. And I have this conversation a lot about vocabulary, is people are like, oh, vocab first. I'm like, no, like allow them to like learn it, have some sort of like relatability, and they have some context. We tend to do like vocab and then context. I'm like, let's do context and let's put some. So like the lowest common multiples, they were like, well, that's the like smallest number that they both go into. I'm like, okay, well, we also call that the lowest common multiple. And they're exactly. Like, oh, okay. And I'm like, cause that's a long jumble. I'm like, words, let's not use that word.
Right. And when you get the students to describe the concept, you can make it so much easier for them. You become the hero, because you're like, oh, that long definition of things you're not really sure, we just call that fractions, honey. And they're like, oh,
like perfect.
Yeah. You know, and so I completely agree. I say the same thing of like, let them experience it and come up with the words. And then you swoop in and go, oh, we call that this. And then we put it on the word wall. And then we put it on the anchor chart. And then we all have this common definition that's really in kid words. So it matters way more. We just give them the formal word for it.
Well, this was last year. So I have a few teachers a few kids who I'm teaching for the second year in a row like this year. And so they were my grade fives like last year, and now they're in my 6-7 class. And they still talk about Jurui's, because I was talking about how I created a money like system, which is so horrible that it is worth one Jurui is worth, or 10 Jurui's is like one penny. And they still talk about Jurui's, and they're like, these boys like know exactly what that is. I'm like, worth. And I'm like, yeah, that's also known as a like I'm thousandth. But sure. Like, we also call it they're like, that's what it is. The Jurui is a thousandth. But that's so good, right? And like, you're right. It's kid-friendly language. They understand it, and they still to this day will connect them together, which is awesome.
That's great. Because you're giving them those like experiences to connect like these really abstract ideas to. Amazing. Okay, Megan, what is something you think teachers are just going to be like so pumped about this book? Like, what's the one thing where you're like, wait for May, get your pre-order in?
Oh my gosh. Well, honestly, I actually feel like all of it is. I do think it is part four, only because I think that, but I don't think part four would be very good if you don't have part one, two, and three. And I will say that because I think once you've gone through the book and you've seen the tasks and you've seen like the non-curriculars and you've seen the thin slicing and you've seen, because at this point I can make these in my sleep because I had to write them all out, right? And like writing them out was a really cool, like fun experience, because I had to write out the launch script, how to lower the floor, how to raise the ceiling, what hints to give, the check your understanding questions, the notes to your future forgetful self, how to consolidate, like, and from doing those things. But that's what part four gives you guys, which is I think like really cool, is that I did all of those, and that's how I gained a lot of my ability there. Even was like, oh wow, like doing the 50 tasks in that way with the 20 non-curricular and the 30 curricular, but doing that, and then that part four being like, hey, now this is how you make them on your own. You start here and then you go da 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 da. And like, it's kind of like giving like the, like, We talk about how Peter has this like keys to the kingdom, or he's got this special like recipe. I feel like, or we like even talk about how in the like assessment part, we kind of open up the like maze to the students, right? I feel mm-hmm. like that's what like part four is. I think it's like opening up, like, this is how it actually works. And like, it's not that we were hiding the maze before. We're like, don't like look over here. But it was just like, I think it just wasn't accessible. But, and just to formalize it, I think it was really nice. So I think part four is, but also part one's, they're all great.
I love
it. The whole book, I think, it's is like, really good.
This idea, I mean, there's that story, right? Like, you can like catch a fish and feed somebody, but if you like teach them to fish, they can feed the village or whatever. But you gotta watch somebody fish. You gotta fish with someone first before you can like learn how to fish on your own. And so that's what it sounds like you're doing. And I am so excited to see just kind of that scripted out launch and hints and consolidation, because I think that's going to take people from what they want to do and then being able to actually do it. So, you know, diving into that and like not glossing over that and being like, oh, I know that, but like really getting in and like trying some of those out. So, woo. And then we're all going to have time over the summer to read it. And then like next school year is going to be the bomb.
Well, yeah. Well, and yeah. And like, I'm even thinking about, I feel like in terms of the tasks, the most important part is to see the rest of it, because there's so many tasks out there in the world. Like, there's no way we need more tasks. There's no way. However, I do think we do need more check understanding questions, and we need more like notes. Those things, I think, are not in these tasks, right? Because if those were in there, this book would not be necessary.
Sure.
This book wouldn't be necessary if all of the tasks out there in the world were just as robust, because that's what it is. And that's why there's not 300 tasks.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the book, is because it just took a long time for one of them.
Totally. Well, and you know, this is really going to help people dial in that teaching practice, because what you've said this whole interview is like, it's not about what's in the book necessarily. It's about what you bring to the task, what you, your knowledge of your students and how you take that with the task and make the magic happen.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I am agree 100%. And like also, I'm right now I am in the middle of my data collection for my thesis. So I'm like really into like, I'm doing a self-study on my 6-7 classroom and like myself. But it's funny though, because I was talking to my thesis supervisor, Kathleen Nolan, who's amazing. She's Dr. Kathy Nolan, phenomenal. And I was talking to her about how like, in terms of like time, I feel like, and like not like time as like how it is, but like teachers' perception of time. And so I feel like teachers are consistently pushing their students forward. And like me too, like I feel myself pushing them forward because of time restraints and because I'm not comfortable with the task or whatever else. But being able to walk alongside them and not be like pushing them into the right direction, but like walking like with them, that's interesting thing. And I think this will allow teachers to go from the, okay, like, let's get through this, like, curriculum to, okay, I'm sure these tasks will be fairly successful. I'm going to slow down. I'm going to mm-hmm. try these out because I have like a roadmap to somewhat follow, and I can veer off from here to there, but I'm not like pushing, because I don't know. There's just something about teachers' time perception. Another time, but.
No, you're so right. And like, yes, we are constantly bound by like the pacing guide, or we've got to get through all of this, but that's not how kids learn. And we know that. And so what you're saying is to be able to walk alongside them as they learn the material, which might not be when that document from your district says they need to learn it. In fact, this morning, I just put together an Instagram post that was like, unpopular opinion, kids have all year to learn this stuff. Just because your addition and subtraction unit is at the beginning of the year doesn't mean that they have to master it by October. They've got till June, you know? And yes, yes, yes. If we could just open up, but it's hard. It's hard for so many reasons.
Well, and like, I know too that people, when they do building thinking classrooms for the first time, they're like, I've lost so much time with the non-curriculars. And so then I think they feel that, like, I don't know what it is in our bodies, but we're just like pushed forward. And you know what? I think it is probably because everything is done in time, right? Like months, days, years, I think that we are just so time focused mm-hmm. as a society and in like education, but there is just this like, internal running motor of all of these teachers being like, gotta get it done, gotta get it done, gotta get it done. And it's like, okay. Yep. But also like, I don't know, some of the things And like, this is just me from after messing up so many times. I think I'm just like, but there's just some parts of the curriculum that I'm like, man, okay, right. I'll get to it. I'm not going to kill it, probably.
Totally.
But it'll get happen.
And I think what like you're saying is like society is like, is very much about speed, but also about answers. And what we know is that the process, kids learn so much more from the process of solving the problem than getting an answer and getting it done. And just because they get it done doesn't mean they learned anything.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. There's just something weird about our just time perception, how we're just always like running. And I'm like, let's just take a beat. Remember in March of 2020 when we just said everyone, like I'm home and just nothing right. happened after that? Remember right. that? How we just stopped entirely? And like, that wasn't good. But I'm saying that like something stopped us from doing the things for a
yep.
while.
Yep.
And maybe it's okay if, you know, if you allow your students grace and give yourself grace. Cause I think that's maybe the other piece is that it's like less about time with the students, but it's more like, it's like a reflection of us.
Totally.
If we're not going fast enough. Like I'm always, cause teachers always tell me they're behind in the curriculum. Oh, I'm behind. Oh, I'm behind. I'm like, are you though?
There is
like,
no
how
behind,
do you know
right?
until the end?
Yeah.
Well, or like, my friend's dad, like I'm always said, you aren't late until you, I'm like, get there. You're not late until you arrive.
Sure.
Like in the moment, like, you know, yeah, yeah. You're not technically like late like, yet because you haven't came yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I love late that. Until the end of the year.
I think that's something for people to think about, like, you know, this idea of what is driving that need to complete things or to go faster, like just kind of checking in with yourself and thinking about why you feel that way. Yeah, that's a good thing to think about. I love that you're writing your dissertation on that. That's wonderful.
Well, and it's funny because I'm not even writing it. Like, yeah, I don't know what I'm like writing it on yet, but it's it's all just like muddlings in like Megan's head about like time and just power and yeah, just many different things about math education and just how we relate to it to our like students. Because I just think that's got to be all a lot of like stress, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To you know, like, keep telling like kids, okay, you know, like hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Let's take a beat.
Yeah.
It's okay. Life is fine. We're good. Totally. We're all here.
Totally.
We made it. It's yep. minus 32, but we are only here.
We're okay. fine. If people want to connect with you, learn more from you, Megan, where can they find you? How can they get in touch with you?
Okay. Well, if somebody would like to get a hold of me, the best way is probably honestly through Twitter. So my Twitter is just Megan Giroux. And honestly, I tell people this all the time and they don't ever take me up on it, but like actually like just direct message me and I'll probably just meet with you like I did like with you today, Mona. Like Perfect. If you're like, hey, can I just talk? I'm like, yep, probably with anybody in the world who will talk because this is my favorite thing to do is talk math. And I'm also in the Facebook group, so you can like find me on Facebook as well. I'm like less active on that, I would say. And I can send my work like an email as well that Great. Is in there and people can message me there. Honestly, and I don't have any fancy like website or anything like that. I'm just Megan.
I love it. And Megan, are you also the host of a podcast?
Oh, yes, I am. God.
Yeah. Share about your podcast. Forgetting.
Yeah. Yeah. So me, Kyle Webb and Dean Venderman are do a podcast called Think, Thank, Thunk. And me and Kyle over the last year, I guess it's been, we finished it a while ago, but we took all of the 14 chapters in Peter's book and we condensed them down to about 15 to 20-ish minutes. This is not to say don't buy the book because you should totally buy the book. But I also recognize that people are busy and sometimes it's hard to read a book fully. So sometimes the podcast is a bit more accessible and it's pretty quick and like easy. And then also Dean, Kyle, and sometimes me, we do like interviews with different people. And just based on how they are like I'm implementing building the classroom is within their process and just different kinds of things. There's so much to talk about, I think, in Absolutely. Math. There's so many great podcasts about math, don't you think?
Like this Absolutely. One. Absolutely.
Like this one, probably. Honest Math Chat. Pretty honest, I think.
You know, if I'm being honest. No, I'm just kidding. No, I've listened to Think, Think, Thunk, and it's wonderful. And you all should go listen. If anything, it gives you like a really good like kind of synopsis of each chapter so that you want to go and buy the book, I would say, right?
Yes, I would hope so.
Right. Okay, well, this was so great. I know people are excited about the book, but I think just like some of the things we talked about today should get people even more excited to kind of dive in and think about how to bring, I love it, bring context to their problems and thinking about what tasks to choose and how to write their own tasks. I'm so excited. Thanks for being here, Megan.
Anytime, literally anytime, probably.
Well, that was your dose of Honest Math Chat for today, friend. Thanks so much for listening. It would mean so much to me if you subscribed, shared this podcast with your friend, or leave a comment. If you have not downloaded my free guide that I made in response to the questions you have all about engaging your students in math discussions, go grab it, monamath.com/discussions. And if you have other questions that I haven't answered, shoot me a DM on Instagram at @HelloMonaMath. I can't wait to chat more with you next week. Remember, we're here every Monday. I'm always listening on my way to work. When do you listen? See you soon, friend.